You live through certain things before you understand them. Francis, Conversations with Friends. Hello, I'm Kennedy Weibel.
And I'm Rebecca Capone.
And this is Reading Pop Classics, a podcast dedicated to popular modern books, pieces of literature that had a cultural impact either currently or in the recent past. Some left a lasting impact, others ziplined through the zeitgeist for a screaming hot minute before vanishing into the mist. Today we're discussing Conversations with Friends, the 2017 debut novel by Sally Rooney. Rooney wrote and completed the novel while she was studying to complete her master's degree in American literature. The book was something of a phenomenon before it was even published. It was subject to a 7-party auction for the publishing rights, and rights were eventually sold in 12 countries. It was a success when it came out, landing Rooney on all kinds of lists of hot and upcoming authors. Rooney followed it up with Normal People and Beautiful World, Where Are You? Normal People, Rooney's second novel, was turned into a really successful television series, which won a lot of awards and was a critical darling. Conversations with Friends was also turned into a television series, and none of those things happened. Did not win any awards, was not a critical darling, and was taken off of Hulu not too long ago. Same creative team behind both of them, but Conversations with Friends, the series, is languishing on Apple TV now. So, Rebecca, start us off. Did we pass the Bechdel test?
With flying colors.
Yeah, this one was a pretty handy pass. And I will say, this feels like a companion piece to the Bechdel test, but also a 3-4-page conversation about men's mental health where a man talks about his mental health kind of honestly. Like addresses it, doesn't shove it down into some kind of cliche about not caring or, I don't know, men don't get to talk about those things, just sort of honestly presented as having mental health issues.
And it's interesting that, you know, he tells her this is kind of the first time he's discussed it, like that he's told anybody about it, that he's gotten used to like Melissa, his wife, being the one to like share the story. So he was like, you know, it was interesting to hear myself as like the main character when it is, in fact, a story about him and about what we probably know is probably one of the most difficult times in his life. Right. We don't certainly hear of anything more difficult from him. But it is. Yeah, I think it's a really interesting point that you bring up, that it is brought up in just this very straightforward way that like men can also talk about their feelings without it having to be couched in some sort of like masculinity of like, oh, but then I played basketball and everything was fine or whatever.
He's not drunk while he talks about it. It's not like over bourbon. He doesn't like finally come clean. It's just, he's a guy having a tough time.
Yes. It's kind of just like a part of their relationship. Because she asks him just kind of very frankly of like, it continues to come up, that you had this very hard year and something happened. Can you tell me about it? And he doesn't hem and haw or push, you know, or push around about it. And he is just very frank about what it is. And he feels that she's someone he can open up to and share it with in a very frank manner. And it is interesting, something else too, I think it does come up in the book. It is talked about in front of him without any, like when they're in France, for instance, it is talked about sort of in front of him without asking for his input or asking him anything about it. So the conversation he has with Francis is a really beautiful conversation. The way he comes out and can just be very honest and share those things with her, because he's somebody who, they are both people who don't seem very vulnerable from the outside. Like that's kind of, I think, an outside perspective of both of these characters. But because we have a little more intel into their personal lives and certainly into Francis's thought processes, we see that they are possibly the most vulnerable people in this book anyway.
It's discussed in front of him without asking for his input, almost like it's a thing he did, like this phase. It's discussed almost as though it was like the period where he was an alcoholic, like something that would be less of a thing
out
that,
of
like,
his hands.
Yes, it's discussed as though he's like kind of chose to, you remember you were going through that thing not in a way this sort of like, oh, this poor guy.
Right. Or maybe it's looked at in a way of how it like affected other people, like that they were worried about him, or that like Melissa was worried about him. It clearly put a strain, it very clearly, I think, as we see throughout the book, put a strain on their marriage. Yes, with like a, maybe a little less like sympathy or empathy into like what he was going through. It's not like he was making a series of bad choices and therefore put the people around him through something painful. Something painful was happening to him.
That's what it is. You said it better. It's discussed as though he made a series of bad choices and now he's on the other side of them. It's not discussed as though it's something that happened to him and that he went through
That he went
when it's
through.
discussed in front of him or around him when he's in and out of the room. So that brings the plot of this is it's not a heavily plotted book, but Francis and Bobby are two 21-year-old college students at Trinity University in Dublin, and at one of their poetry performances, they meet Nick and Melissa, an older couple in their 30s, I believe, their early 30s, and become entangled with them. And eventually, Francis and Nick start an affair. And that's the plot, right?
That's the plot, yeah, in a nutshell. I think something that's a theme or part of the plot that I want to talk about is the parallels in these two relationships, because Francis and Bobby are very close friends. They have a very close female friendship,
They dated for a
but
while
they
when they
have,
were
yes.
younger.
Exactly. But in high school, they've been friends all through college, but in high school they dated and they had a romantic relationship, which Bobby ended. And that was painful for Francis. Francis is not the one who chose to end the relationship.
It's the only relationship Frances has had.
Yes, it's the only relationship that she has
Her
had.
only romantic relationship
The only
that she's
romantic
had, yeah.
relationship. And then they do have this very close friendship. And it is certainly Francis's closest friendship. She does make a comment in the book, to Bobby that Bobby's her only friend, and that's not quite the case. They have Philip is a friend of hers, someone she knows through university, and that she's working with at an internship, and a few other friends are mentioned throughout the book. In fact, they mention a friend, Marianne,
I
and I
was going
wonder if
to
it's
ask you.
Marianne. The first I read Normal People first,
Same.
and then I came back and read Conversations with Friends, and I remember the first time trying to decide if the Marianne that's casually mentioned in here is Marianne from Normal People, because she is also at Trinity. She and Connell also go to Trinity, I believe, in
She
Dublin.
is. They're also in Dublin, so Marianne is not exactly an uncommon name.
Yes, surely it's not.
I like to believe it's the same Marianne.
I like to believe it's the same Marianne, and I was trying to look for clues. But Marianne has a there's a few men she dates throughout Normal People, and in this book she does have a boyfriend,
That no one likes.
that no one likes, and nobody likes her boyfriend in Normal People either.
No, so that's why I
I
was.
kind of think that it might be. I do feel like that's a little bit of like a Bret Easton Ellis,
That's.
esque. Little nod to Marianne. I do kind of wonder if she went back and like pulled Marianne and put her in this group of friends, because from what we know of Marianne, I could see her being friends with these two girls, or at least having some casual loose acquaintance, with these two girls.
I couldn't find any clue that made it definitive, but I decided just while I was reading it that I was. It's Marianne from Normal People.
It was the same for me. I couldn't. I in both readings, the first time I read it, and then in reading, in preparation for the podcast, I was, really looking for clues, and I couldn't find them. But oh, so kind of what we were talking about. So Francis and Bobby, yes. So they've had this romantic relationship. They are now very, they have this very close female friendship. Melissa and Nick are married. They have been for several years, it seems. I think maybe since their mid-20s, and they're now in their early 30s. There's a little bit of an age difference between Nick and Melissa. She's a few years older than him. But they're at a they're at a challenging part of their marriage. They're not sleeping in the same room. They are sort of almost like separated, but not. They're not.
Melissa's had two affairs, the second of which she started while Nick was in psychiatric hospital.
With a
and
friend.
she started it with Nick's friend. And then after Nick found out, continued that affair.
Correct.
And it was her second affair. And that has put some strain on the relationship, as well as Nick's depression itself.
So some of the plot, I think, has to do with the parallels between these two relationships.
Yeah, I'd agree.
Because Bobby and Melissa have some similarities. They are these like sort of strong, outwardly very sure of themselves characters. They both don't appeal to me a little bit. Throughout this book, I feel, and I think maybe we're meant to feel this way. I don't dislike either of these characters. We don't get to know them quite as well. We don't see sort of their inner workings the way we sort of do with Francis, and to an extent Nick. We get to know these characters a little bit better. So any flaws that they have, we do sort of get some background into them, and we don't have that with Melissa and Bobby. But I guess I find Melissa and Bobby to be less sympathetic characters.
I dislike Bobby the most.
Bobby's
The book
Yeah.
also tells us that's not uncommon. Francis tells us early on nobody likes Bobby.
But people are sort of engaged and like mystified a little bit by Bobby. Like Bobby can kind of like talk to everybody, Bobby can kind of fit in everywhere, but Bobby is challenging.
Yes, she's a rich communist who's never worked.
Yes, exactly.
Like she's a she doesn't stand up to the shape of her own ideals, which she goes on about at length, but she doesn't actually do anything about them except talk about them. There's a line in there where Francis is reading through some of like years worth of their old conversations that they've had over instant message type platforms. And she tells Francis at one point, based on a comment that Francis said, she says she's anti-love or something like that. And she says, you can't just be anti-things. But she herself is simply anti-things, as we know from the narrative. She comes from a very rich family. She's never had a job, doesn't plan on getting one, actively looks down and like comments on how it's like stolen labor, but she's never contributed any of it. She doesn't actively support any of the causes or ideals or beliefs that she speaks about. She can only speak on them. And when she gets out of school, she's going to be a professor, so she can keep doing that and not actively do anything about it. Like, she's not going into the Peace Corps. She's not, you know, going to work for a nonprofit. She's going to be a professor at the school she's currently at.
Right. Bobby is kind of unlikable.
Yeah, she's unlikable.
And I find Melissa to be slightly unlikable as well.
When you have an affair with someone while they're in psychiatric hospital, and the someone you have the affair with is the person in psychiatric hospital's best friend, you're going to come off as a villain. There's no way around it.
Yeah.
Because she doesn't actively do anything except get anxious about that rich lady. She doesn't like have any particular crimes against either of the girls, or even really against her husband outside of the affair, which is something that's in the past. It doesn't happen over the course of this novel. It's something that has already happened. She and Nick have moved into whatever stage of being past that they're in when we meet them. But that just taints you. There's no, a character doesn't come back from that.
No, it's it, you
when
don't.
They get his,
it's
when
tough.
They get his little page time in the book, because she is not one of the main characters. Our focus is Francis and Nick.
Right. And Bobby. And I was looking for a quote that's a comparison between Nick and Bobby, essentially, from Francis is telling. So Francis feels comfortable sharing with Nick that her father is an alcoholic. So we don't see a lot of Francis's father in the book, but she has a very strained relationship with him. We do get some background that her parents are divorced, mainly because the father is an alcoholic. And we do have some sort of increasingly like upsetting scenes. She goes into his house and it's
filthy.
filthy. I mean, you know, bugs everywhere.
Garbage everywhere, rotted
garbage
food.
Everywhere, rotted food. This man is not capable of caring for himself. He's not, you know, he's not putting money in her account. She has complex feelings about taking money from him while she's in school, and she doesn't have much of a relationship with him, but it is, of course, hard to have a relationship with somebody who is an alcoholic of this level. But it's not something that she shares with Bobby, which I think is interesting and telling, because they do have this close relationship. She describes Bobby as one of her only friends, and this is someone that you can't tell this like really major thing in your life about. And she does tell Nick. And Nick is, you know, listens and is supportive. And so a little bit of a long quote, but a comparison between Bobby. And I think this is one of the things that makes Bobby unlikable, which is why I've chosen to share this. So Francis says, after this conversation, I asked myself why it was that I could talk to Nick about my father, even though I'd never been able to broach the subject with Bobby. It was true that Nick was an intelligent listener, and I often felt better after we spoke, but these things were true of Bobby, too. It was more that Nick's sympathy seemed unconditional, like he rooted for me regardless of how I acted, whereas Bobby had strong principles that she applied to everyone, me included. I didn't fear Nick's bad judgment like I did Bobby's.
I think that's part of the main crux of the novel that you've just touched on there, of like we mentioned that it doesn't have, it's not heavily plotted, but what plot there is, I think we are following Frances as she learns about her relationships, right? Mm-hmm. Learns the kind of person she's attracted to and the kind of person she wants to be around. And I think what you just read is a part of it, because they're both performers, Bobby and Nick. Like, Nick is an actor. He's a professional actor. He performs for a living. Bobby, when we meet Francis and Bobby, Bobby is a performer who performs on stage with Francis in her poetry. And Bobby is just a performative person in general.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah.
Right. Like, I think the book in general actually is a lot about performance. I think that is an overarching motif in it. I think it's about Francis trying to perform as a person. I think youth in general is a lot of performing the person you might be turning into.
Yes.
You're trying on different selves. You're trying yourself against new people. You're performing an idea of yourself that isn't fully developed yet. I think that's a major part of it. But I think the fact that Francis is the two main people that she pivots between romantically in this book are Bobby, who's very performative and is actively performing with her. She doesn't write any of the poetry. She doesn't contribute any of the thought into the work itself, but she is the main performance part of what it is that they do, you know, around the college at these readings. And Nick is a performer by trade, but they have different like real personalities. But like Frances is, you know, she likes a performer, but
yeah, that's
interesting. She's learning to pivot, learning about herself that she prefers Nick's style of, what is it? A sort of unassuming person who performs professionally, and the performance is a detachment, is detached from who he is as a person.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Bobby is just on all the time. Like, the performance is all of it.
And I think that's what Francis, you know, Francis writes this short story about Bobby without telling Bobby, without sharing it with Bobby. Melissa's publisher, you know, reaches out to her, shows some interest in her, reaches out to her, asks her, you know, for a piece. She submits this piece she's written about Bobby, sort of as just like, almost, I think it's just like an emotive exercise, like just something that's kind of like coming out of her, because she's having these feelings about Bobby. She's learning about her, to your point, her relationships throughout the book. So she writes this story about Bobby. She sends it off to Valerie, Melissa's publisher, and it's published without telling Bobby, and Bobby's very upset about it when, you know, Melissa shows it to her. And Bobby's very upset about it. And I think that's a little bit what she's upset about, is that Frances has touched on that and sort of exposed that side of Bobby.
She also used it successfully.
And used it successfully. Yes, she gets paid for it. And Bobby feels really, you know, betrayed by this, and says that, you know, if she had known about it in advance, maybe she wouldn't have felt that way.
She's mad about it. And she's mad she got paid for it.
I think she's also mad she got paid for it. And because something else that Frances doesn't share with Bobby is that she's having money troubles, that her father's spinning out, and he's clearly kind of on this bender.
You can't tell Bobby you have money troubles because you're just going to get a lecture about how money's a construct of the state and the patriarchy, and it's all stolen labor. You can't just simply tell Bobby that you don't have money.
Right. When Bobby comes from a rich family and is never worried about money and it's never an issue for her throughout this book.
It's not a fun conversation to have with Bobby, so you keep that to yourself.
Yes. And I mean that, that does say something about what kind of, you know, friendship do you have if you find that she clearly feels judged by Bobby, right? Like when I feel like I'm saying and doing things like not telling her about her father is like, right. She doesn't want to hear some lecture about this deeply personal and upsetting thing that like she is trying to come to terms with and try to figure out like how she feels about her relationship with her father. She struggles with the fact, like I said, that she takes money from her father for school. She lives in this apartment that's owned by like the father and the uncle, I think.
I think the uncle owns it.
Her paternal uncle, I think, is the owner of the apartment actually, but you know, she's benefiting right from his financially.
The pressure these kids put on themselves around that, though, like that they feel bad about it. We're sort of like, you're 21, you're in college, use the family apartment. It's cool.
Right.
Like, that's completely cool.
But
it's not that weird.
But I think the pressure
is
because
young.
She struggles with what her feelings are towards her father.
Yeah.
You know, and that's something that she discusses with her mother. You know, she doesn't feel these close things for him. She can't even sort of admit that she has some sort of grudging, like, well, I love him because he's my dad. Even if he's problematic, it's like she's not sure if she even does love him or what her relationship to him is. And I mean, that's a pretty heady thing to struggle with.
All of that is what I think is like the charm of this novel. So I want to just go ahead and own this. The cover of my copy of this has a blurb from the review of The New Yorker that mentions Rooney's natural power as a psychological portraitist.
Yes, I have that copy as well.
Okay. And I don't care. I'm not getting paid for this. I know it seems super lame, but like psychological portraiture is what, that's it. That's the perfect phrase for what I think is charming. And like, I think what works about Rooney's style is a really deep psychological portrait of these people with things borne out through things like her very honest assessment of her relationship with her father. That is like, her mother keeps saying, you love him. How could you not love your father? How could you not love him? And she's like, I don't really know what it is I'm supposed to love about this guy. He's only ever been mean and angry and scary. And
right.
Yes, there's this relationship now where he gives me my allowance for college that like has sort of been worked out around my existence. And it's weird that that is now the basis for like what I'm supposed to have as far as a relationship with him now that I'm 21. But like, it's taken for granted that you love your father. What is it about this guy I'm supposed to like so much? What is it about him I'm supposed to love? Because it feels gross that it would be the money and there's nothing else there.
Right. And this is kind of, I mean, yes, if in a certain context for people in certain socioeconomic statuses, I guess, you know, we do think of, like you said, with the, like, you're 21, live in the family apartment. It's okay to take
yeah.
money from your parents. It's okay to be supported by them. And certainly that is, you know, that is true for a lot of people, but what if that's the only thing you have with your parent, particularly if it's the only nice thing that you have from a parent, and everything else that you think of is them is like, I was terrified of you growing up. I felt like I grew up tiptoeing around the house because you were either hungover or drunk. You were mean to me. You were mean to my mother. And then now I have barely any relationship, you know, I have barely any relationship with you.
And even the apartments that are removed, because it's her uncle, it's his brother. Like, he's the gateway to the uncle, I suppose, by like being his brother, but it's not even him exactly.
Right. And then it's like, he's not, you know, she has money problems. He's not putting money into her account. And even then it's like, you know, the mom's like, well, why don't you call him? And she's kind of like, well, I'm just going to call and ask him for money. I have no relationship with, I
yeah.
barely have a relationship with him. And like, she feels weird about it. And so she's suffering, right? I mean, she's not like eating a lot. She ends up taking money from Nick, which I think is also, you know, uncomfortable for her. It's an uncomfortable thing between them. in the relationship as well. And she still doesn't feel comfortable, but she feels more comfortable taking money from somebody that she's sleeping with, from a married man that she's sleeping with. I'm not saying this with judgment. I'm just saying from her perspective, right? She feels weird about taking the money because this is a married man that she's sleeping with. So I would feel weird about taking money from this man if I was her as well, but she's more comfortable doing that than to call her drunk father to be like, you put money in my account every month and now you haven't. And I don't have money for like food and stuff.
I think it's a very interesting novel for the same reason that, like, I think a lot of people who don't like it, which is that we are following a person who is taking a very unhealthy path to sort of replacing relationships with some of the she's taking an unhealthy path to replacing some of the unhealthy relationships in her life with one that is marginally more healthy, in the sense of, if nothing else, that Nick is not mean or judgmental. It's
Nick is
like,
not mean or judgmental. Nick is not an alcoholic. Nick, she feels, cares for her and roots for her unconditionally.
Yeah, no,
like
it's like going to AA for alcoholism, but you're a pack-a-day smoker at the end of it. Like, you're better off, but the smoking
right.
ain't great. The smoking's not good for you necessarily.
And so this kind of dovetails into this, you know, like, again, something that, like I said, I see is a large part of the plot in this book is the parallels in these two relationships. And Francis and Nick are similar, and they have an understanding. They're similar, and they have an understanding of each other. There are these quieter people. There are these less, they're less sure of themselves. They're more insecure, and they are with these very sort of like dominating, they have strong relationships with these, you know, these two more dominating, characters, and they both have a little bit of an inferiority complex with their main partners, as it were, to use like non-monogamous
terminology.
They're primary partners.
I think that's a fun twist we get in the first act too, because the way the book is set up and the way we're introduced to everyone, even though Francis is our first person narrator, it seems like Melissa and Bobby are going to be the focus of this book, right?
It does in the beginning. Mm-hmm.
And it seems like they're going to be the two that have an affair or that have some sort of relationship that takes the train off the track and puts a stick in the spokes. Those are terrible metaphors. I'm going to edit those. But the way it's being presented to us and the way we're reading it, it seems like it's going to be like those two are the clear main characters of this book. And then suddenly the two tertiary characters, suddenly one of them goes over to the other one's house and they start sleeping together.
But I think that's part of what I think. There are several things.
I was just sort of like, oh,
I like
this
that
is
too.
Yeah, I actually don't want to spend that much time with Bobby and Melissa
that make Sally Rooney a really good writer. And I think something like that is an example of it, that we get these two, let's call them dynamic characters in Melissa and Bobby, that seem like that seem like they would lend themselves to being the main characters. And we have these two quieter, but we have the viewpoint of these two like quieter characters, right, in the beginning. And then, yes, the book becomes more about them. These are the characters that we're rooting for. And I do think that that's an interesting twist of like, oh, like these two are the ones that have it going, you know, that have it going on. Like, we're, you know, yeah, exactly. Like, and it sneaks up on you at first of like,
yeah,
is this a thing that's going to happen? Like, she likes this guy. Why does she like him? Because we don't see much of him. He doesn't seem, I don't want to say that he seems unlikable.
He seems pretty
like,
flat in the beginning.
He's flat. Yes. Yeah. Thank you. That's a really good way of saying it. I was trying to like put my finger on it that like, and they even kind of comment on that he's like, when they come, I mean, for what it's worth, Melissa just like brings some people over to the house,
mm-hmm,
out of nowhere and makes Nick come down to socialize. Which not everybody would be. I don't know how dynamic I might be if my husband showed up with two people that he met and was like, hey, come down here and have wine at 11 o'clock on a Tuesday. I probably wouldn't want to do that.
I also love that, like, as you're reading it, he is flat, he is quiet, he is barely there. And then when you hear Bobby tell Frances the story later, she's like, when he came down, like all angry and was running around and yelled at her about the dog and all that, you're like, that didn't happen. That's like,
Right,
we just,
that's
we see.
Bobby re that's Bobby reading something into it because she's threatened that
Yeah.
Frances is she's threatened that Frances likes somebody else.
Well, she's also like, she likes Melissa a lot at that point, and she just automatically doesn't like
Right,
him, and
she does. She
she
likes
attributes
Melissa
these
a
things
lot.
to a man who comes down, gets a drink, takes the dog out, and goes back to bed. Like, he does nothing in those
Right.
scenes.
He doesn't have very many lines. Like, he doesn't really have very many lines. He has a very flat character. But something, so the similarities, and that feeds into this, the similarities between Francis and Nick brings me to a quote that I really enjoyed. Nick and Francis are together, and he says, "People do tend to find me kind of cold and like not very fun." And she says, "I was excited that we shared an experience I found so personal." And quickly I said, "People find me cold and lacking in fun." "Really?" he said. "You always seemed charming to me." And yes, I think that's perfect that, like, because he does seem, because that is a perfect description. Like, cold, like, because cold doesn't necessarily mean that somebody is unkind or rude, but cold can just kind of, it can just be cold, right? Like, this is just not somebody who is warm. It's not somebody who's super inviting, and that you feel like drawn to and like drawn to having conversation with. That is obviously how people sort of view like Bobby and Melissa. I mean, maybe once
Yeah.
Bobby opens her mouth, you find some things that you don't like, and she's challenging. But she'll talk to anybody. Like, she's bubbly and like effusive, right?
She does. She talks to everybody. She.
And Melissa comes across that way as well. And yes, we do sort of, and Francis and Nick are both presented that way. So I did really like that. Like,
It also
people
reminded
see
me a
me
little
as
bit of
cold and like not very fun.
that one reminded me of Eleanor Oliphant, the way that exchange is set up. I was excited that we shared this in common. I couldn't wait to tell him. People find me
People find me
that.
cold and also lacking in fun. Yeah, that I enjoy that exchange between them, and I do, and that is like their similarity, right? That like that's how they're aware that other people see them that way, and they are both aware that they are slightly richer people than that, right? Like, they do have some self-awareness. So yeah, I think the parallels between the two relationships, between all four of these characters is also a huge plot in the novel. And I like that you brought up that when people are younger, they're very performative and they're as like a way of figuring out who they are, because Frances references that so often throughout the book. Like, there's several things that I highlighted. There's several passages where she's, kind of where she acknowledges that of like, she's feel like she's, she has room to kind of like make mistakes and experiment, and that sometimes she'll do something and think like, oh, well, I guess that's the kind of person I am.
I have that. Well, I have two. I have the quote that you're referencing is, Bobby told me she thought I didn't have a real personality, but she said she meant it as a compliment. Mostly, I agreed with her assessment. At any time, I felt I could do or say anything at all, and only afterward think, oh, so that's the kind of person I am.
Yeah, I have. That's one of the ones I have that I have highlighted.
And then, speaking of just her like acknowledgement of just how she is performing herself, even on, it's the first page in my copy, but she says, so her and Bobby have been at their poetry reading. They've met Melissa. They kind of know who Melissa is. She talks about doing an article with her, and they're going back to her house for that first time where all four of them lay eyes on each other. And she says, I felt excited, ready for the challenges of visiting a stranger's home, already preparing compliments and certain facial expressions to make myself seem charming. She's mentally getting herself ready to perform the act of being a guest in a
Yes.
home.
And so again, as we're talking about like kind of Sally Rooney's writing and the fact that she's in her early 20s when she writes this book. Now I look back and I see what, like what you commented on in people, particularly in this age. So like, you're in college and you consider yourself like a little bit of an adult. You're being educated on a higher level. You're around other people that are being educated on a higher level. Not everybody goes to college, right? So like when you're in high school, we're all studying the same things. We all have to be here. In college, we don't all have to be here. We're studying different things. Their conversations and stuff are a little more intelligent and thought-provoking in these books, particularly Sally Rooney's writings. I mean, I think her intellect really comes through in her writing. But I feel like that kind of insight into that like performative nature of being that age is not something I was aware of when I was that age.
No, that's why I hate ripping it from another review, but to have been kind of in the middle of it. She wasn't an undergrad. She was doing her master's when she wrote it, but that's 2 years out, right? A year out from undergrad.
Right. So, I mean, she's still what, 20, 24?
Yeah, she's still infuriatingly young to have written such a great book. Like maddeningly, like flip over the Monopoly board, like break a table, angering, like kind of young. Like I'm so it's infuriating how good this is, the age she was when she wrote it. But no, to get that part of it, and not even just about it's not even just the first person narrator who's that insightful. We get it about Bobby. Like that I'm ragging on Bobby. I think she's the character I like the least, but she's not a badly written character. The fact that I dislike her is because she is drawn, even as not our main character, she's drawn really well. And I just see exactly the kind of person that she is. But like the way that she performs her life, also a young person, like kind of performing this angry young Marxist role, right? That she's out there.
And she's in, you know, and something to note, because we have ragged on Bobby a little bit, but Bobby is also a 21-year-old.
Yeah,
Bobby is also she is also a young person that is allowed to be flawed, just like we see, you know, and I mentioned this earlier. You know, we see Francis's flaws, as it were.
Rooney is also careful to give us moments where we do see that Bobby is not like cruel or utterly selfish or.
No, she's definitely not. She certainly, she certainly cares about Francis. We see that.
The first cramping scene, like we're.
Yes, that's what I was going to reference
in
as well.
In the bathroom is very sweet. Her concern over her and her reaction just when she finds out about the affair with Nick, which she's not thrilled about, but she is not arbitrarily mean to her friend about it. Although I guess she kind of, you know what, I say that. She does just casually drop that Francis is having an affair with a married man in their
she
friend group at one
thing,
point. But in the very
beginning,
she does some
things that are kind of mean.
Yeah.
But are also, again, these are young characters. And we are meant to see, like, there is an age, like, this is a book about young people, because I do think that I think adults in their 30s are relatively newly married. I mean, these people haven't been married for 20 years, right? I mean, people in their 30s are also still young. But the difference between a 21-year-old and someone in their early 30s is vast. I mean, the learning and the growing and the changes that happen in your 20s to get you into your early to mid 30s are
your 20s are
astounding, exponential.
Yeah, they're exponential. 21 to 25 might as well be 40 years. 25 to 27, 100 years. Like the amount of changes in the world around you, the position that you find yourself in the world, and like just your personality and the things that happen to you are just drastic in your 20s. Like there's what Francis goes through. There's maybe the end of your first real meaningful relationship, like the one that she ends with Bobby, the beginning usually of your next real serious relationship. You get out of school, you find a job, like your whole world is upended over and over again in that decade, unlike any other decade in your life.
But Bobby, she very clearly cares about Francis. And like, you know, you and I both referenced the cramping scene. She's having the sort of these early signs and stages of I think she's polycystic.
Endometriosis.
Thank you. Yes, it is. She's getting these early signs of endometriosis. you know, and Bobby cares for her. But yeah, she does, you know, she does kind of casually drop that she's that Frances is having the affair with Nick, you know, in front of Philip. There are some things. She's jealous of this relationship. She's jealous. I mean, she's, I think that she sees, and they have an exchange about the jealousy, right? Like, you know, she writes, Frances accuses her of being jealous, and Bobby has a very negative reaction to it. She has a very Bobby-ish reaction to it, and saying, you know, it was wrong of her to, you know, it was wrong of Frances to accuse her of being jealous. And she says, it's just so stereotypically homophobic to accuse a gay woman of being secretly jealous of men, which I know you know. But even more than that, it's really devaluing to our friendship to make out like I'm competing with a man for your attention. What does that say about how you see me? Do you really rank our relationship below your passing sexual interest in some middle-aged married guy? But I feel like we see throughout this novel that she is jealous. And I don't.
I think we're meant to see through that particular is it an email?
It's an email. And she has to be, you know, kind of self-righteous of like, oh, you know, this comment is really homophobic. And it's like,
I
you
think we're
guys
meant
have
to
a
see through
pretty.
that accusation that it's she's covering for the fact that it wounded her because she realized when she said it that she was jealous.
Yes.
Or
Yes,
maybe
exactly.
she already knew she was jealous, but maybe she didn't know Frances knew she was jealous. She
Right. Or
got
she's in,
upset.
or she's
And
certain.
all of that is so nuanced to have in this comedy slash drama of manners.
Yeah.
Like it's a
No, we do. We really see these things. And again, when we talk about these like parallels in the relationship, so like, you know, Bobby is jealous. And Frances comments kind of after that email exchange. I don't know, she and Bobby get together. And she said, it was obvious to me that Bobby's feelings were not sincerely hurt anymore if they ever had been, and that she just liked to make fun of me whenever I experienced romantic feelings. And that's also something that lets me know that Bobby is jealous, because Bobby has been the one. Bobby has clearly had other sexual and romantic relationships. But Frances is, but Fran, but for Frances, but with Frances, you know, that's the only one for Frances. And so that comment in it, like, lets us kind of see that it's like, you know, she likes that. She enjoys that she's been like the one person that Frances has opened up to and been romantic with. And she clearly does not like the thought of that happening with somebody else.
it's the early stages of Bobby treating Frances the way Melissa treats Nick.
Yeah.
Because Bobby and Frances are growing into Melissa and Nick.
Yeah.
Like Melissa and Nick are Bobby and Frances in 10 years' time, or however old they're supposed to be. 10, 12 years older than them.
Yeah.
Melissa's opinions of Nick that he's. That he has no backbone, that he's spineless, that he, by the way, the email in which Melissa describes Nick to Frances after Melissa is told about the affair is the MVP of the novel for me is just Melissa takes everyone by the neck in that email and just shakes the, like, she is ruthless. Ruthless in that email and her assessment of Nick and her assessment of Francis and her assessment of what they like about each other and what they're providing to each other. And she's even ruthless on herself, but like it's the funniest part in the whole book for me.
Her, yeah, I agree with that, because it is like,
But that is where
it is just, because it is just like a ranting email.
I have parts of it that I want to read when we do quotes because I was just, I've read it like, I read it, then I reread it, then I, much like Francis says, I read the email several times. I too went back and was like, yeah,
I
same,
read it a few
Francis.
times as well, because it's chock full. There's so much in it.
But her assessment of Nick, which generally is that he is weak-willed and callow and, you know, someone who doesn't really seem to have much of a backbone, and is dependent upon her for defining what his actions and his choices and all these things are, is a little bit how that's how Bobby sees Francis. They're 21, they're younger. It hasn't progressed all the way to like kind of the way Melissa and Nick's relationship is, but you see the like opening notes of that particular symphony playing between them, particularly at the end when they get back together, when like Bobby and Francis reunite for
right, for, when they like sort of rekindle the romantic aspect of their relationship, more or less.
Something I like a lot about this book was that it reminds me of a lot of other books without copying those books. It feels like me and Sally Rooney, you and Sally Rooney, because you and I have read a lot of the same things, but it feels like me and Sally Rooney have read a lot of the same things and liked a lot of the same things, and she has incorporated them into this. Like, this book feels like it was written by someone who likes Patricia Highsmith. Like from The Talented Mr. Ripley and Strangers on a Train, Bret Easton Ellis, Donna Tartt. There's just all of these like little things that feel like they're floating through the tone
yeah,
of this
I
book.
can see that. This is a book that is written. This is a book that is written by somebody who's well read.
And one of them, I think, that I picked up at the end, I think, is the Jane Austen double happy ending. So we get a false hat. We get a happy ending with Bobby and Frances. They get back together. It's like rushed. She sends her the email. She comes to all of these conclusions. And Bobby, like, suddenly she hears her key in the door. She bursts through the door. She says, "That was a weird email, but I love you too." And then they're together. And that's our first happy ending. Like, that's a classic, like, we've been waiting for them to get together. Will they, won't they? Right. Like,
right.
That's
It's a little bit of a rom-commy happy ending. And
but
I don't,
you can,
and I don't, and I don't mean that in a derogatory way, but it
no.
is a little bit of like the rom-com happy ending there. Yep.
But as you're reading it, you're like, there's 30 pages left.
Right.
And then we get our other romantic ending that like ends on the last line. Much like The Outsiders, this is another book that was written just right to the last line. Like, she wrote it right to that final period where she gets the random phone call from Nick while she's in the bookstore. And I don't know about you, but when like it first happened and she sees him on the thing and she answers, I thought it was going to be, again, I was duped. I thought it was going to be like, there's just some sort of denouement, right? Like, it's just, they say goodbye to each other. She realizes he was always frivolous, whatever it is. Like, she just gets past it, picks out a book for Bobby, roll credits. But no, instead, they just have this escalating conversation. And then we end on the like, come and get me, which is like our other real romantic ending.
Because you are rooting for Francis and Nick.
I don't think I realized I was until that conversation at the end. I wasn't like not rooting for them, but like I was with the book where I was just sort of like, oh, that. However much this book wants to present everyone as being cool with these affairs and unconcerned about it, and like they're all having dinner together after they all know about the affair and it's all fine. I mean, I'm reading it. The author tells me that's what's going on. Fine. But like, there's nowhere this can go. Like, it's a doomed affair. Like, he's not going to leave his wife. We want to stay together and stay married, but I do
right,
want to
he's
keep
not
dating
going to leave
you.
His
Like,
wife. Yeah, no, because that's made apparent. But we also know, like, she's not really ending things. But I mean, they have the falling out for a little while, but like we also know that relationship is not unfinished.
No, but it's two 18-year-olds who decide they're going to stay together freshman year of college, even though one's going to California and the other's going to Baton Rouge. Like, okay. This is over by Christmas break. Like, this is not, it
right.
Can't go anywhere. You can't do this. That's what it feels like.
But I think that's part of the book, because we have these conversations. There are conversations in the book, generally sort of driven by Bobby about monogamy, right? Like, this book is also a commentary on monogamy and non, or a commentary, I should say on non-monogamy, right? That like, we're not always, the theory of people who choose to be non-monogamous, there is this theory that we can't get everything from one relationship. And this book is a really great example of that, because we're talking about the parallels between these couples, right? Like, you know, Nick Nick and Melissa clearly mean something to each other. They've gotten married for a reason. They've stayed together for a reason. When he comes out of the psychiatric hospital, like, they talk about divorcing, and then they're both kind of like, no, we don't want to do that. They choose to stay sort of separately together. And that's where we meet them, right? Bobby and Francis choose to end their romantic aspect of their relationship in high school, or rather Bobby chooses to end it, but they stay friends. They have a very close relationship that they are maintaining as well.
Yeah, no, you're right. That is the same.
And then we are talking about how, you know, what Francis and Nick have in common. They are similar people. They can open up and mesh with each other in ways that they are not able to do with their two primary partners.
Yeah.
Those two primary partners feel a little bit superior, right? And like, they are clearly looking for things outside of these relationships. They don't feel like these relationships completely serve them either. And I think that, again, for people that choose to be non-monogamous, my understanding is that that is part of the appeal, is that you can have this primary relationship that stays together based on whatever it is, and then have these outside relationships. I mean, that's a very modern view that not a lot of people, a lot of people, I guess, feel that they couldn't do.
It's commented on what you just said in what I think is the line that ultimately sums up the novel, the envelope, I think is what that's called. But it's before our first romantic ending, when Frances is writing an email to Bobby and she says, I see that nothing consists of two people or even three. My relationship with you is also produced by your relationship with Melissa and with Nick and with your childhood self, et cetera, et cetera. And that's, I think, what, like, the quartet of these people sort of intermingling and causing each other joy and grief is striving for. Is what Frances comes out of this with, is that she keeps focusing so hard on a single person. It was Bobby. And then she just kind of became very obsessed with Nick in her interior. She doesn't like act out like this obsession in any kind of like startling way for those around her, but like, knowing what she knows about, like, he's a married woman. I'm 21. He's much older than me. Like, she becomes sort of consumed by questions of like how he feels about her, even though you would think maybe like on the surface of it, like, you know, obviously don't delve too deep into that. What could it possibly be? But she does become that way. But like, when she kind of comes around to what she's learned from all this, I think it's that nothing consists of two people or even three.
Yeah. And I think this book is meant to be a little bit of an inside look at that view of like, of non-monogamy, what people are looking for, the complexities of relationships. And I think that,
doesn't seem like anyone comes out super happy at the end of it, to be honest. I'm not sure.
Sure. And that, I don't argue with that. I don't argue with that at all. But look at the number of monogamous relationships that people
valid.
Are also not happy in. Do
no,
you know
totally,
what I mean?
Yeah, no, like, valid.
It's the human condition that some stuff just isn't going to make us happy. Or, I mean, another way to say it is that it's not going to make us happy all of the time. I think most, I don't want to be stepping in anything here, but I mean, I think most people that are married or in a relationship that goes on for a very long time, it's not the beginning of the relationship the whole time you're with somebody.
No.
I mean, there's outside forces, there's inside forces, there's tough times, there's good times, there's bad times. But I mean, there's a lot of unhappiness throughout this book from these relationships, right? But again, like I said, I mean, you know, monogamous people are also not consistently happy all of the time either. So this is a very modern view, I think, on love and relationships.
Yeah.
This is a younger generation's view on love and relationships. And I mean, in my opinion, she's a young person when she wrote it.
I also appreciate that while it is that, and while it has, I don't know, non-traditional relationship dynamics littered throughout the novel, It doesn't try to actually give us any answers on them, and it doesn't try to preach to us about them, and it doesn't actually spend all that much time on defining what any of it would mean ultimately, which I think is nice for the reader to get to experience it just as narrative without a take. I
Yeah,
liked
and I
that.
mean, because relation, I mean, and I think that, and I think that to have tried to put a finger on that or to try to have wrapped that up or defined that would make this a really poor book.
Something that I really like about this book is that it is unabashedly highbrow, like unrealistically so. Like it is unrealistically highbrow in the way that Adam Sandler movies are unrealistically lowbrow. Like just like in Adam Sandler movies, people aren't really pulling everybody's finger all the time and taking dumps on the floor or whatever is going on in these books or these movies. But in this, it is the opposite of that, like the way like Woody Allen movies used to be, where like everyone who goes to dinner like has
No, all the conversations are really like
conversation. Yeah, everyone in
philosoph
a
they're, everything's really philosophical. Everything's really philosophical, or it's about like the poli you know, the political moment, the conversations between.
multiculturalism, like there's a
Yeah. Even the conversations between like when she's looking when Frances is looking back at like the text conversations between herself and Bobby, like those are really highbrow conversations for two college kids to be having.
when people have conversations in this book, they know who Slavoj Zizek is. And I'm probably not saying his name right because I've never really said it out loud. I've only ever seen it written down. But he's a Slovenian, modern Slovenian philosopher. Actually, for our listeners, if you would like a really great and easy introduction to Slavoj Zizek, there is a film he did called The Pervert's Guide to Ideology, which is a movie that he made explaining sort of ideology through the lens of like classic films and like through the clips of them and recreations of them and stuff. And it's a fun way to get into his work anyhow. But not even just like the conversations, like the people are meeting at poetry readings and they're going to readings and they're getting books of essays published and they're getting paid over 1,000 euros for a short story that someone asks them for. They're not submitting and getting rejection letters. Like everyone, and I like it's unrealistic, but you know what, like I don't care. Like I like the aspiration that maybe people could live this way with like just like this is a book where no character in this book has ever received a DVD or a video game for Christmas, like ever. Like at the end, when she's shopping for Bobby's Christmas present, she's in a bookstore, right? And like he's
Right.
calling from the supermarket, like to as they're going to like cook it. No one's heating up anything for dinner.
No, they're all wine drinkers. They vacation in France.
Yeah, like even the poor people, like our main characters, like are classy and highbrow and write poetry and belong to like Marxist groups. Although, considering again, another reference back to like just the performative nature of Bobby, she quits when she just gets upset and quits because she doesn't want to be part of a group. She
Oh,
wants to.
the feminist, yeah, the feminist college group.
Yeah, she makes up a reason to quit because she doesn't want to be in a group. She wants to be the Bobby show. But that also, like, again, that follows through with her character. The performative nature of all four of our characters, Frances performing herself, Bobby performing her ideology, Nick as a professional performer, and Melissa performing for her sort of wealthy benefactor, who is the person kind of helping drive her career and getting it off the ground, and her and Nick also simultaneously performing a marriage. I liked that old Woody Allen style. And just before everyone comes at me, I'm not saying Woody Allen's cool. I understand that dude's off. Like, I get it. But the old movies, just, yeah, this is not me condoning this man or his actions. But those old movies, just the way that everyone in them like knew who like Godard was, or like had seen Kurosawa films. Like this has that to it. And I like that aspirational intelligence that, like, I don't know, maybe you go to a dinner party and we don't all just talk about what we're streaming on Netflix. Like we're not all
Right.
just talking about like the memes we saw on Reddit. We're discussing, you know, books and film and stuff. I like that.
You know, for what it's worth, I thought that the TV version of both of these shows was really excellent. And I say that as somebody who very generally does not like the TV or movie adaptations of books. I mean, I think that most people that read when you try to capture something on television and film, it just doesn't come across the same way, which isn't to say that I've hated every movie I've ever seen or TV show I've ever seen based on a book. Sometimes they are very good in their own right, but compared to the book, they're lacking. And I actually really found that both of these things were very well adapted. And I'm not entirely sure why Conversations with Friends didn't get the accolades that normal people did, because I felt like it was super well cast.
I've seen neither, but one of the reviews I read while looking up things for this episode, one of the reviews I read said that if, I don't remember the actors' names, but said if the actor who played Nick and the actor who played Francis had any chemistry at all, maybe the show would have been a little bit better. And I was like, oh, well, that's.
I don't know. I don't find that these are people that have like is I don't find that the two of them have this super sexy or romantic chemistry in the book either. I feel like it's very based on.
I can see normal people being easier to adapt because Marianne is consistently in peril in some way within that book.
Yeah.
And Connell, our working class hero, goes through, you know, a character arc of like becoming the kind of person who can love Marianne. And then in the end, he literally saves her. It just has a more traditional arc to write to.
I guess I like I said, I don't know. I guess like the thing with Conversations for Friends, I guess why that didn't come across to me, I don't feel like these are people who have this like palpable sexual chemistry. I feel like these are people that have a very emotional connection, and that still came across for me in the TV show. And
Oh, well,
I felt like they were really well cast as being these awkward, not very fun people as they describe themselves, right?
I was going to watch part of it before we did this, and it wasn't on Hulu anymore.
Oh, I felt like the act. I just felt. I felt like the actors captured that super well. I felt like they were really well cast, and I felt like their relationship came across on the TV to me the way I read it in the book. But I will say that if you watch Normal People, but I mean, if you've watched Normal People, the two actors that play Marion and Connell, like they do have great sexual chemistry, and they have to. That is an enormous part of that book and an enormous part of their relationship in that story. And it comes across on screen. The actors are well cast, and they do have great chemistry.
That one might
And
still be on
so
Hulu. I should, maybe I'll try to find that one.
and it is a much it it's a much sexier it's a
No,
much
I read
sexier
it.
story,
Yeah,
right? And I mean,
it's a really horny book. It's a
it is a super horny book, and the show is as well. And Conversations with Friends to me, and for our listeners, you should know that the reason we chose to do Conversations with Friends over Normal People is for that very reason, because we felt this was a much more comfortable thing that we could discuss as brother and sister,
Yeah, I couldn't do a whole
than
episode
Normal People.
of which would have been easier because I've already read that one.
But as since we're related, we felt like that was going to be a real awkward discussion. But yes, I felt like the emotional connection is it felt like the emotional connection is the bigger part of the connection between Francis and Nick. So I suppose that's why I felt like the show was good. I felt like the two of them really embodied, because like their relationship is awkward. They're awkward with each other
Yeah.
in a way that is that in Conversations with Friends.
Yeah, Nick and Francis.
Francis and Nick they're awkward people. They're awkward with each other. Their relationship is awkward. Something that we didn't talk about
I think it lands by the end, though. Like, I think there
It
is,
does.
but speaking just again on the adaptation, I can see how it would be difficult to adapt. The development of Francis's character isn't, it's like the third to last page we get the line where she says she doesn't, when she's talking to Nick, she has a line where she says, he breathed in and out of the, he breathed in and out into the receiver. I didn't need him to say anything then to explain what he was feeling. And that's the first time she hasn't in the entire book, in every conversation where she's just desperately like, I don't know what he meant by this. And I wonder what he was feeling. And I wonder what he thought by this. And like sometimes the things she doesn't understand that Nick is feeling are like as though she's an animal who doesn't under, or an alien who doesn't understand human behavior. Like that's how little she gets him. And it's not till the penultimate page that we get that line that tells us she's like grown.
Oh, that's a really good point. There's a lot of cerebralism in this book.
Like she's desperate to know what he feels about things throughout this. And like one time I think she breaks, she bursts into tears while they're having sex and doesn't understand why he stops. She's like, I don't understand. He must have
He
thought he
must
didn't
not,
love me.
yes, he must not like me. He must not be attracted to me. So that's what I was going to
Like
comment
she...
on, or that I was going to say that we hadn't talked about yet that I wanted to touch on is like, it is that her like arguments, like the two like the few like little falling outs that she and Nick have are absolutely infuriating
Yeah.
on they're a little bit infuriating to read. I mean, and again, they're not. This is a young person who's trying to figure herself out. This is a person who doesn't understand her own feelings and how to talk about, she doesn't understand her own feelings to like sort of express or identify them like within herself. So she's certainly not able to express and identify them with someone like Bobby, who she feels defensive around, and then with someone like Nick, who's also an awkward weirdo who sort of
She's,
only
she,
knows how he's feeling sometimes.
but she's more used to Bobby and she is more capable of handling herself around Bobby because she is more used to her.
Yes.
And I also like, because all right, so I think that she ends up with Nick long term. I don't know what that looks like. I don't know how well that develops. I don't know if he stays married to Melissa, whatever, but we get the, in one of the like conversations, she looks back up with Bobby. One of them starts with her saying, but with Bobby telling Francis, like, you never tell me what you're feeling. You never express your feelings. And Francis says something like, you're committed to this view of me, but like, I do express my feelings just because I'm not saying them all the time out loud and like telling everybody about them all the time. Like, you do. You think that that means I don't have them, but I do have them. And she's like, you don't tell me your feelings. And then there's a pages and pages later, chapters later, where Bobby's watching a documentary or something in the living room, and like Frances is having a terrible time about something, and she comes out and tries to tell her about it. She goes, actually, Frances, I'm watching this. And the line is, this is Frances talking. I said, sometimes I just feel, and Bobby placed a finger over her lips and said, Frances, I'm watching.
Right, Bobby says that she's not expressive.
Bobby tells her, you don't tell me how you're feeling. And then when she starts to, she's like, I'm doing something. And we get to see Francis kind of come through something at the very least. And it's that where, when she's having this final conversation with Nick, she understands what he's feeling finally. And in this moment when they're having that exchange that I read before, and she doesn't need to question him about it or feel anxious about it or wonder about it. And she's talking to someone who also is listening for how she's feeling and not accusing her not expressing herself, and it's really just kind of gaslighting or any of that, even though it's like this deeply imperfect situation that they're in. The relationship resolves with the true romantic ending, which is come and get me.
Yeah.
Like that final line, come and get me.
So do we want to do quotes? Are we ready for quotes?
We can do quotes. Do you want to know what people who don't like this book don't like about it? Because
Oh, I do. Yeah. Let's talk about what people who don't like this book don't like about it.
So I'm not going to read anybody's particular bad review from Goodreads on it because you can go read those yourself. But the most common, like if we were doing word clouds, self-absorbed and deeply unlikable characters. Nothing happens in the book. It's horrible people doing horrible things. Pretentious. Self-indulgent. And I gotta say, the one that I was...
I think self-indulgent. Self-indulgent is something I hear when people are deeply against other people being non-monogamous. You know how sometimes people can't just let, like, maybe I want to be monogamous, but I can't stand that someone else is going to be non-monogamous. Like, that is something that I hear. That is something I hear those type of people say about people that are non-monogamous, is that it's self-indulgent.
That's true. You know how I was kind of taking it? It was that, like, it's people who, because I also think there are readers who, like, just get mad if an author has style.
Oh, yeah, I see what you're saying. And, like, that goes along with the pretentious.
Yeah,
that it's pretentious
and self.
That it's highbrow, like we talked about, right? That it's highbrow.
Yes.
And Sally Rooney is clearly someone who's, I have no doubt that Sally Rooney is mostly sitting around having conversations like the ones that Frances and Bobby do, based on having read three of her books and also having read, like, interviews and other things that she's written.
I like reading her interviews because she seems very much like she doesn't want to be doing them, which I enjoy. Like that
you
she's
know,
just
she
sort of
writes
like,
about she writes I... about shy, awkward girls that are really smart, and I'm fairly certain that is autobiographical based on again on her interviews and on the three novels that she has written, and just everything I've seen about her leads me to believe that she is one of these girls.
No, I also like it as a sort of like, so what were you thinking when you wrote this? I was thinking about the way people have relationships and conversations with their friends. Like, what do you think? Kind of question is that? I like the sort of the fact that it sort of highlights how silly some of the interviews are also.
Yeah.
But no, it, I think that your take on self-indulgent is probably, though, having read like pages and pages of these, just because I was curious, it's people find the what I think they took as the morals of this book to be lacking, and I don't know, untraditional, and that's a bad thing. That they were bad people, toxic people, self-indulgent people, and that meant they couldn't like the book. Maybe
yeah.
couldn't. Maybe that's a bad assessment. People are allowed to like or dislike whatever they want, but that was what the people who disliked it mostly thought about it. Which is interesting, because, like, I don't know, I don't mind an unlikable character, but there are characters that I don't like when they are badly written. It's not that I find the character's actions, when I find a character unlikable, it's not because I find their actions particularly on the wrong side of some moral line. It's because they don't make any sense, and I find that unlikable, if that makes sense.
Right. Like, for instance, we don't find Bobby to be a super likable character.
No, I dislike her character, but I think she's really well written, and I liked reading about her, and I liked this
But
book.
she's well written.
My book club did not read this book, but we were talking about it because some of the people in my book club read it, and several of them hated it, and they hated it for these reasons. They're just like, it's just, they hated normal people too. They read both of them, I guess, to their credit, but they were just sort of like toxic people doing toxic stuff. Don't care for it. And something I find interesting about that is because these are people, this is not a criticism. I genuinely mean everyone is allowed to read and like whatever they like. Just go read it, enjoy it, read as much of it as you can. There's no wrong thing to read. But these people deeply like, do you know these Sarah J. Maas books, like A Court of Thorns and Roses? And
oh, are these, they're like fantasy romance novels, kind of?
They are. And I feel like, I don't know, there should be a warning on the cover, because I am, I guess they moved my generation, I'm a millennial, but I was raised in the era of like Guns N' Roses doing deep cut guitar riff, heavy ballads with names like A Court of Thorns and Roses. And I picked up that book and it was not what I thought was coming. It had no connection to any kind of like cool guitar riff, hair band style
Am I
narrative.
correct? They're fantasy novel. They're fantasy
Yes,
romance
no, and
novels, right?
they're
Yeah, okay.
no. The other problem is that they're clearly written by children, which means that Sarah J. Maas is two 11-year-old girls, one sitting on the other one's shoulders, wearing adult clothes, and pretending to, and you know, going around having written all these books, and that's child labor. But they really like those books. Like they like we're reading one now for
So
book
something
club.
that feels really highbrow, so something that is a more highbrow book feels pretentious to them. This is not the kind
Which,
of thing that they maybe enjoy reading so much of, which is fine
but the
because.
structure is the same. All of those books are a young, awkward girl who doesn't think she's special, but we know as the reader that she probably is torn between, it's always very hetero in the ones that we read, but like it's torn between two guys who are both clearly toxic individuals, one of them more so than the other, but then it turns out that it's a mistake. One of them, he did it because of a thing. He was under a spell, or I don't know, his mom was in a dungeon, whatever it is, and that's why he was acting the way he was acting. And it's this same structure all the way down to the toxicity and the like, people
But
doing bad things and people getting their heads lopped off, and like they're far more violent.
this book is literary fiction,
This book is literary
and
fiction, and those are.
I kind of consider those books, and we've talked about this before, and I'm not trying to be a snob, but those books are a little bit more like, okay, there's like literary fiction and there's like airport fiction.
Yeah, no, they're, and I'm glad they like them, but
And
they
I
are.
also and I also here and there like to pick up some airport fiction and just go through a fast fun read that's entertaining because books and movies and TV exist for us to be entertained, and they also exist for us to feel like we get something more out of it, right? And so for me, literary fiction is something I get more out of, and something that I'm dubbing airport fiction is something that is entertaining and that's also enjoyable. But I
The
do
more
think
the
that if
morality in those Sarah J. Maas novels is far less murky than, or traditional morality, whatever as you would probably consider it, is less murky in those than it is in the Sally Rooney books,
Right.
where
And
there's
so
like ambiguity to people's
I
motivations
can see that
and.
this is the non-monogamy is very like hot button, right? I mean, there are people who feel very against that. Which is fine, but I
I
think
will
there are
say though,
those of
in
us
this
who can feel
book,
like this isn't the lifestyle that I would choose, but I don't necessarily, but I mean, if other people would choose to be non-monogamous and that is how they want to live their life and that's what works for them, then like, I mean, I don't. It doesn't affect me, so I'm do you is kind of how I feel. But I also understand that like this is a hot button thing and not everybody feels that way.
we're given as a reader a lot of outs in this book by Sally Rooney. Like we are let off the hook by the fact that Nick has gone through two affairs that he went through that his wife had, one of which, when you say it aloud, that he went into psychiatric hospital and she had an affair with his best friend, is like and like
She just straight up cheats on him with a
yeah
woman at a literary festival.
yes
And
we're let
that
off
is a
the
thing
hook
that's
for
like, well,
judging him
okay.
because of that. We are allowed to go like
Exactly.
he earned this. She doesn't have any right to be upset.
And then we do get more about their marriage that they are on a,
They're on a break. They don't
to use
sleep
the friend's
together.
term, yeah, like they're a little bit on a break
Yeah.
from marriage, right? Like their marriage is not clearly defined, they're not sleeping together. And yes, to your point, like she has now had two affairs, one that was particularly egregious. There, I have to say, I find Frances to be a super likable character. Again, we see her sort of like flaws and all, because she's the character that we know the best. But like, I really like Frances. Frances is a young woman that I really respect. And I mean, I think part of that is because we get so much of her dialogue. So again, like the things that are considered like flaws and like the mistakes and stuff she makes, we do get the background behind it. We do get like the cerebral aspect of like where some of this stuff is coming from. But like, she's a cool girl. Like she's a cool, awkward girl that I would want to be friends with if I had gone to college with her and want to have fun intellectual conversations about books with.
I think in the writing is what makes that work, because she's so brutally honest about herself as well as other people, that it makes it easier to root for her while you watch her make mistakes, while you watch her occasionally be hurtful to other people. Like, it's the fact that she tells us so many things about herself with such stripped down, raw, like, assessment of herself and like the way she thinks and feels. I think that gets us on her side and makes what could be a difficult narrator far more digestible for us. Well, for a lot of us, not for,
well, for a lot of us, but no, I think that is interesting that you read, like, you reading off what it is that people don't like about this book, because like I said, that does, I do see that, because I feel like this book, because I feel like if you pick up this, if you look at the cover of this book, we've talked about this before, the covers of books, blurbs that are written on the back, we were both really like catfished by Eleanor Oliphant. And so this book, I feel like, could be similar, right? And I feel like, just like the way this book was talked about, it's written by this like cool young author. And if like you pick up, you know, if you look at the cover of the book, if you look at the back of the book, and this is the cover of the book before the TV show came out, or at least mine is.
I've been burned by a lot of books that look like this, though, where it's a cool young author and it's a book about like young millennial women in a city somewhere. And then I'm like, oh, it's just, are you going to get that guy? And
right. And then
fine.
It turns out to be Airport Fiction, right?
Yes.
And I feel like someone else might look at this and think it's going to be, again, this kind of Airport Fiction, or maybe I should say something that's like just more easily digestible fiction. Cause I don't want to sound like I don't want to sound like Bobby. I don't want to sound like I'm over here talking
I'm okay
about books
sounding
the
a
way
little
Bobby
bougie.
would.
I don't like books where I'm just waiting for some girl to end up with a guy who doesn't seem like a good fit for her in the beginning. They're fine. I hope other people like them. I don't want to read that shit.
Right. But I feel like some people are probably picking this book up thinking it's going to be, thinking it's going to be a Lauren Weisberger book. They're looking at this as like, he's married, she's having an affair with someone who's married.
Yeah.
And that is, I mean, if that's the black and white way that you want to look at this book, then I can see that it's unlikable. And I mean, if you're reading this being like, this feels really pretentious because you don't read a lot of literary fiction and these types of books, like I can see where this would come across as like, maybe not what you expected.
Did you have an MVP of the novel? Mine was Melissa's email decimating everybody. Her just, it's like 200 words. She just rips shit through everybody's little dynamic in this book.
There is a line I really like. Okay, so we've talked about Frances's, you know, performing being a person like throughout the book. And so they're going to France. Melissa has invited them to France, and you know, Frances doesn't initially want to go because it's like, well, I don't think I should go because like I'm sleeping with your husband.
Yeah.
And Bobby really wants to go. So Frances is saying of Bobby, I wished I could ask her what she thought I should do, but I was sure if she knew what had happened, she'd be appalled at the idea of me even going to Etables. In a way, I was appalled too, but also fascinated. Before that summer, I'd had no idea I was the kind of person who would accept an invitation like this from a woman whose husband I'd repeatedly slept with. This information was morbidly interesting to me. And I appreciate like the self-awareness. I appreciate that it's like she can't tell Bobby why she doesn't think she should go on the trip because Bobby's judgmental. She doesn't find this is something she can share with her, so she can't tell her why she doesn't want to go on the trip. But then that she does go, it's like she's looking at it as like, oh, I guess this is like the kind of person I am. Those little asides throughout the book, like I said, you know, we've discussed a few of them. There are several things like that that come up in the book where she's sort of like, oh, I guess this is the kind of person I am. And I really enjoyed that. Just like that level of self-awareness and that level of self-awareness about a young person being written by somebody who was this young is I think the MVP of the book for me.
I like that. Yeah. The timeline on this book is very short. It's like June to Christmas. We don't even get to Christmas. We get to Christmas shopping.
We get to Christmas shopping. It's the summer before their senior year. And then through, basically just like the first semester even of their senior year. It is a really short timeline. And to your point, I mean, she fits a lot into this book. It is like the outsiders that it is just sort of relentless story.
Yeah. I also, it's the proper length. I was happy with all of that.
I was also going to comment on the fact that you and I do love a book that's around 300 pages.
You want to do quotes?
Let's do quotes. I have one pulled up.
Okay, go.
Oh, okay. Frances is talking about the book Middlemarch, which she has to read for an English class. And she says, "The cover depicted a sad-eyed lady from Victorian times doing something with flowers. I doubted Victorian women actually touched flowers as often as art from the period suggested they did." And I thought that was funny.
I have one from when she goes to get her ultrasound, to get her diagnosis for endometriosis. And she has that, like, just sort of heated conversation with the doctor. And she says, "We hated each other energetically. I could see that." And I just found that very funny. I have another one while you flip through your book that I just thought was a nice description. She said, "A white square of sunlight lay on the carpet like snow." That one, and a line where she says, "The room was dimmed, evocatively dimmed, as if it contained a hidden pool of water somewhere." I don't know how she knows that that's a thing people feel, but the minute I read that, I was like, oh, I know what that lighting and that room feels like.
Yeah.
That you get the sense that, like, there should be a small, quiet pool of water somewhere in nearby.
It is. It's a deep description. So I like there's a line because Frances is a poet. She said, "I sat in bed in the morning writing poetry, hitting the return key whenever I wanted." And that to me is poetry. I'm just like
Actually.
that to me is poetry. That made me laugh. That
She
felt
has a
like a good
self-description at one
description.
point where she says, "I looked like something that had dropped off a spoon too quickly before it had time to set."
Oh yeah, I remember that.
This one may be the one I thought was the funniest from Francis. "My favorite part of the gospel was in Matthew when Jesus said, 'Love your enemies, bless those who curse you, do good to those who hate you, and pray for those who spitefully use you and persecute you.' I shared this desire for moral superiority over my enemies. Jesus always wanted to be the better person, and so did I." I was charmed by that deliberate misreading of Jesus's words. And the flagrant, it's not even like an accident, just a flagrant and deliberate misreading of the message there. And turn it into a desire for moral superiority over your enemies.
One I have, they're getting roses because Valerie is coming to the house in France, and Francis describes the roses. "The roses had huge, sensuous petals and tight, unrevealing centers, like some kind of sexual nightmare."
I
And
have that one marked as well.
I thought that was funny. And I also think that that is kind of like Francis.
Yeah, I think
Yeah.
that's I think that's a great read on that. So would you recommend this?
Well, I would recommend this book if you were the kind of person who reads literary fiction. And if you were the kind of person who can accept that somebody else might have a different view about something than you do, or that other people might want to live their life in a way that does not appeal to you.
I think the cover of this book looks a little bit like, I think it's a perfectly fine cover, but I can see how someone might mistake it for chick lit,
Yeah.
which is fine. I like Jennifer Weiner. It's not a criticism, but
I love Jennifer Weiner.
I can see how you might mistake this for chick lit, and it's not that,
Yes,
but I
I
would
think that
recommend it.
is exactly.
It
I would recommend this book, but I do not, but I, but it is not a chick lit book. This book is literary fiction, and it is meant to, I think, challenge ideas or bring awareness and thought to it is a book that is meant to provoke awareness and thought, and so it is in that vein, absolutely not a chick lit book. It is maybe not going to end the way you think that it should or that you want it to. And so if you were into those kinds of books, then I highly recommend this.
I also, if some of your friends have described it as very, very funny, take that with a grain of salt. What's their sense of humor like? Is it the kind of funny? Because it's not, it might not
It's
be
not
funny.
Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy
Yeah, it's
funny.
not that kind of funny.
It's not even Eleanor Oliphant funny.
No, this is like Bret Easton Ellis funny.
This is Bret Easton Ellis funny.
This is sort of what I wish he had matured into as he got older. We got a little smattering of it with Lunar Park, but then he just
And then he went right back to.
even honestly, if I'm being like, I mean, I say Lunar Park is one of the better ones as he got older, but like it's compared to Glamorama, it's compared
Compare,
to some
yes,
of
that
the
is
others.
compared to
It's
some of the other things that he's written. That is true. Now,
yeah.
it's been a long time since I've read Lunar Park, so I don't, but I did remember enjoying it more than his, like, any of his other
Yeah.
later works.
We're gonna have to do one of his books because we talk about him a lot.
I know we do talk about him a lot. Don't worry, we'll stick with something that we thought was good.
Okay, so what are we doing next week? Well, not next week. What are we doing next time?
So next time we are doing The Sellout by Paul Beattie.
I'm excited for this one. I've read it before and I loved it. I'm looking forward to reading it again.
This is going to be a new read for me, and I'm excited about it. From what I understand, it is comical, but I believe that it is darkly comical.
I'm excited for us to get into this one.
Yeah.
So, as always, please remember to subscribe or like or upvote or whatever the positive action you can take on the platform you listen to this podcast is, please take that action. It's a favor to us. Also, if you have thoughts, ideas, contradictions, or suggestions for things that might be good books for us to do on the podcast, you can write to us at readingpopclassics@gmail.com. Thanks.
Thanks for listening.